I mentioned earlier that change the sermon subject for today is going to go into the next phase of a process of what people need to do as they begin a new relationship with God, as they begin a relationship with God, frankly, and not just a new one. It's the first for most individuals. Maybe have had some understanding in the past, maybe have been connected to the church in times past, and there are certain things they must do, obviously. However, there are a lot of people who have no understanding whatsoever, coming from different backgrounds, coming from different groups. And I was intending to read a couple of those things, I guess, to some of you as to some of the comments being made. I know sometimes these things are interesting for people to see what some are saying, and a desire that people have, and some things they're going through, and responses to the book after reading it. But obviously, a part of the process that they go through in the beginning is that they have to come to address the Sabbath. We've started out talking about that. There is a process that people have to go through in deciding whether or not they're going to address the Sabbath, begin keeping the Sabbath, observing the Sabbath, which also includes the yearly Sabbaths. And then last Sabbath, we talked about tithing. So those two things really try and test people as to where their heart is, as to whether they're serious about this, as to whether they're truly repenting and turning toward God. Because if they can't make it past those two areas, they can't progress and grow. They will not be given the help to progress and grow. So again here, very important that those things be addressed. The next phase of what we're probably going to address is a process addressing repentance and what God offers and what God gives in the sense of being baptized, the need to be forgiven of sin through Jesus Christ, and then, of course, the laying on of hands that follows that, and receiving the impregnation of God's Spirit. And so we'll go through that, and then we'll probably come back through and go through a beginning of step-by-step things of how to keep the different holy days, starting with the season of Passover, what Passover is, how it's observed, the days of unleavened bread, Pentecost, and so forth. So we are going to go through a complete series to help people along as they progress, because there are a lot of questions coming in, and this will help to answer. This will be the best way of answering those, especially when something does take place in a greater magnitude, especially in the United States, and sobers people up more so, and they begin to seek out questions, seek out answers to questions, then they're going to have that framework that's already set. So a lot of things are going to be in place already. So this is just a little bit of a ripple in a greater wave that's coming to help prepare and make everything ready so it's on the website so that people can receive it and so that we can send it out in an easier manner. And we don't have it in place yet. So God is blessing us to put things in place so that as and when things take place, there'll be a better way, a more organized way of dealing with those things and truly helping people along. So again, these things are helping us to prepare for what's coming later, and it takes time to do that. So everything is on a schedule, and God knows us to the nth degree. There are things we can learn from how He leads us, and certainly we're going through that process. But anyway, I thought I'd read you three different letters here that sent in to me, or at least to the site, concerning some of the things that have moved people. Here's one from Indiana. It says, Dear friend, I want you to know that I have read your book and I am so impressed. Most of what you say is straight from the words of the Bible, such as hell, parenthesis here, the grave, a new earth, and so forth. It's amazing how much distortion there is in religion. I also realize that we're heading in a terrifying direction where every person will become aware of the grave reality of destruction upon us. Anyway, I am teaching classes in philosophy and religion and would like to have more books to share with my students. I was hoping that you could send me more books. There are 25 students in my class, and I would like to have enough to share with all of them. I also would like to have a few extra for friends and family if it is all possible. I admire you greatly for your book, and you're working hard to get the word out. Please let me know if you can assist me with the books. So, you know, people move powerfully. They just don't realize some of the repercussions sometimes is going to come upon them as a result of their changes and what they're doing. Another one here, it doesn't say where it's from, it just gives a person's name, but anyway, it says, my name is, and then they give the name. I would like to take a moment to let you know your book, The Prophesied End Time, has profoundly impacted my life. Your book has opened my eyes tremendously to my foolish and selfish ways. I was raised a Catholic and became a Baptist, and then later a Methodist. Not one time during my past 26 adult years has anyone ever explained these events so clearly while providing scriptural backup as support. I want to thank Ronald Wineland and all the folks that helped him make this book available. No doubt folks will want to get together with one another to discuss this book, the Bible, and upcoming events that is described as I do. I hope that you can soon put up a chat room or something else on your site so we can seek each other out. Well, it's not going to work exactly that way, but they'll learn as time goes along here how it will work and the process that they can go through in order to learn, because it's a learning process. People don't realize as a whole, I get a lot of this where people just don't understand. They don't know what steps they need to take, and we've discussed some of those already, but the basic part is that they must learn. And that people around them aren't going to be as necessarily as excited as they are and moved in the same way that they are, and they'll learn that very quickly as well. That's why God is going to humble people to bring them to that point if they will turn that way or turn to that. The third one here, it says, thank you so very much for my free copy of the Prophesied End Time. Please let me give you a quick history, then I have a question. In the early to mid-70s, my wife and I were driving home from Hollywood one night when we were still living in California. I found myself listening to Herbert W. Armstrong's song, Garner 10. All of a sudden, I was turned into what he was saying. From that point on, I was hooked on the World Tomorrow program. I also received many booklets, which I still have today and have reread off and on, especially the United States and British Commonwealth and Prophecy. We moved to South Dakota in 1977 and were unable to receive the program here. With the changes and upheaval in the church, I eventually lost contact, although I have often wondered what became of the Worldwide Church of God. Interestingly, the church did meet here in Rapid City for several years in the fall for, I believe, the Feast of Tabernacles celebration. My wife, who is a waitress, waited on many of the families, and she and her fellow waitresses always remarked on how nice the people were and how well-behaved the children were. I have had no contact with the church for nearly 10 years. Now, out of the clear, I received this book, one I had not asked for, nor was I aware of it. Now I am in the middle of the book and pick it up to read every chance I get. Once again, find myself hooked on the information I am reading. My question, though maybe strange, is why did I receive this book? As I read, I keep thinking, did God arrange for me to receive this book, and is God talking to me personally? Well, then it says thank you and gives the individual's name. You know, very moving things like that that happen in people's lives. And, you know, if God intends for someone to receive it because of something he's going to do in them, through them, they're going to get it. And some of the ones in the beginning here may be some of those individuals that are going to have the first opportunity and ability to make some changes first in order to be used in a greater way. And as I mentioned, there are going to be things happening later on that are going to move many more. So there is a process that God takes us through, and we have to have patience because there are things he is working out. There is a time factor involved here, and we don't always know what that is. And that ties in with the sermon today, so I'll continue on now into the sermon subject. The sermon is entitled, Keep Focused. Keep Focused. You know, even though we're going through an incredible process of things that are taking place here, brethren, it's important that we do this and we address this from time to time. We need to keep focused as God's people. Keeping focused on our calling, what God has called us to do, requires that we remember how far God has brought us. It's an amazing thing, brethren, when you think upon those things. Keeping focused, we must, as we so often do, we go back in history and we remind ourselves, and God wants to be reminded of the history of the Bible, of the history of what he's been doing for 6,000 years with mankind and beyond that even, so that we can keep things in perspective. We have to keep things in perspective in keeping focused on what God is doing with us, and especially for us, if we have had the opportunity of being called early on, as some new listeners are being called early on to have an opportunity. And if they want to take hold of that opportunity, then God is offering them that which they can't even begin to comprehend. Sometimes those of us who have been in the church for a long time have difficulty in understanding what God has truly placed before us. Because we have been around for so long, we don't have the ability, even as human beings, to fully grasp what we have been given. We have to grow. I think of all the growth that's taking place through time in my life, and I think about those things that I'm coming to understand far more deeply as we continue forward than what I did before. An ability to comprehend what God has given to me. I understand it far more deeply now than what I did at any point, obviously, before this. And we become more thankful. We become more excited because we see something in a greater way, what God is doing. It is awesome what God has given us to accomplish. And so, brethren, we do need to keep focused because there are so many things that distract us. This world distracts us. Sometimes the waiting distracts us and we go off in a different direction, or we do different things, or we let down, or we have to remember we're in Laodicea. And the primary battle of Laodicea is one of letting down. It is one of drifting because of time, because being in battle all the time, that's a battle. It's hard. It's not easy. It's difficult. It's hard to keep focused then because of that, and we can't let down. That's why one of the primary admonitions over and over again in Scripture is to watch. That's what the 10 virgins failed to do. We live at that time of what the 10 virgins failed to do. They did not keep focused. They weren't watchful and alert spiritually like they should be. And we let other things distract us. We want time to pass up and pass up quickly so we can get there. Well, yes, we do. And there's nothing necessarily wrong in that in one respect. It's just a matter of understanding there's a timing that is in God's hands. And it's not all about us. It's about what God is doing for everyone and what God is bringing to this earth. And we have to keep focused on those things, brethren, and realize there is a process He's taking us through, as He is the entire world. And we're a part of that process of what He is doing, His work. And so we have great opportunity in that, and we need to understand that and be thankful for that. But again, it's very easy to become distracted. It's easy, if we're not careful, to begin to want to escape some of the battle, to back up a little bit, to dig into a foxhole somewhere and get a breather. We don't have time for breathers. We don't have time for any of those things. We have to march forward and continue going forward, brethren, because we're going into greater battle, not less battle. And so if we understand those things and keeping us focused, those are the things that help us to become stronger, more determined than ever to do what we need to do. And so, brethren, a part again of keeping focused on our calling. We have a specific calling. Those who are being called early on right now, it's a calling. There are those who are going to have an opportunity being called into the world tomorrow, into a new world, into the millennial period, to live on into that world. And that is an awesome calling, because not very many on the earth even have opportunity for that. When you look at all that's going to take place, there are going to be millions, but if you look at the percentages, that's not very many compared to the rest of the world. 10 million out of this country, that's not very many. And so it's an incredible opportunity to be a part of that if someone is. And if they have a part early on here, that's even more important, because you're going to have opportunity to become more grounded. You're going to have the opportunity of God's Spirit working within you as you come to the point of baptism and repentance and the change and the laying on of hands and the beginning of God's Spirit growing within you. And you'll have opportunity to help many others, because that's why God's calling people early, to have opportunity to do something later on here that's not clear yet, that's not visible yet. It's just what God shows us and tells us as we understand what God has called us to do, to be a part of. We know where we are in time, and we realize there's much more before us, and that God works in a very orderly fashion, brethren. And so for those of us in the church, we understand we've been given a special calling, and a special calling again in the sense of realizing that not very many in the church are being drawn out of the fire. Not very many are going to have opportunity to be a part of a remnant. And so even there, we are so awesomely blessed. A special, holy calling at the end time. And so again, keeping focused on our calling, what God has called us to do requires that we remember how far God has brought us, what we've gone through, the training, the molding, the trials, and the mercy of God. And so much of our training, brethren, has to do in the molding that God has done in our lives. We are the clay. He is the potter. And He molds and fashions in us what we need and what will help us to be more fulfilled, more complete, and better able to fit into that part that is so needful as a part of God's plan and God's purpose. And we'll be most fulfilled in yielding ourselves to that process, the trials and the hardships and the difficulties we go through, because we tend to resist the molding. As certain things are molded into us, we tend to resist that as human beings. We don't want to make those changes. We have to yield to that and desire that God change us. And we're unique. You know, the thought today in a very powerful way, just we all go through different things. We don't experience the same things. I've had this conversation so many times with so many people that God's molding and fashioning something specific into each one of us. There's a specific place we fit. And that requires that whatever things happen to us, because of where we are, because of what we're going through in life, because of our background, our makeup, the way we think, we're all different, we're all unique, and we're also unique to that which God is molding and fashioning and preparing within us. We're not all being prepared for the same things, and so we go through different things, and sometimes there are just things in life that happen to us that God uses, just like Romans 8:28. Everything works together for good if we understand those verses. If we understand what's being said there, and if we have time today, we'll go over there and look at some of that. But it's incredible, brethren, if we grasp and comprehend the molding and fashion that God takes, whatever circumstances come our way. It might be a matter of family. It might be a matter of occupation. It might be a matter of health. It might be many things. It might be a combination of many things that just happen to come our way in life that God will use, because all things do work together. God will use, can use anything in life, brethren, to help us to learn from those things we suffer through, that we go through as human beings. And we go through more because it's intended, because God will use those things to help us to learn and grow. And it's just an awesome process, brethren, especially as time goes by and we look back on what God has done. So it's important for us sometimes to look back, to remember how far God has brought us, to remember the things we've gone through. So today, we're going to go into some of that. You can apply this to your life, how it applies to you, and remember. And keep focus, brethren. For me, it's going to be a little bit of a twofold purpose, because I'm going to give a little bit of a history of some of the things I've gone through, because people have been asking questions, and this will help to answer some of those things, even within the series here that we're going through. It's a natural desire that people have of wanting to know various things about the one that's being used to teach them, to help them in their process of growth and development. So something I have never really enjoyed doing, don't like going back and talking about myself and certain things, but I realize there's a need for that, and so I'm going to mention some of those things in context with just myself remembering, brethren, and in going forward and keeping focused on what God is doing. So again, as we go into the various scriptures, you can apply those things to your life, but I'm going to use this a little bit for myself to help give a story here of certain things that will help other individuals who are new. And also to show how that there are things we need to learn from as a part of a process. So the reason some of this began to happen here is flying into the area of Kona here on the big island of Hawaii. The island's called Hawaii. There are different chain of islands through here. And this is the one farthest to the south and the largest of the islands. And 12 years ago, we were on this particular island. We came here for the Feast of Tabernacles. And to back up a little bit more, there's a reason why we came here for the Feast of Tabernacles. We were given a transfer from headquarters, from the church, from worldwide at that time. And very unique how we came here. So it's kind of moving as we flew in here, because the airport's right on top of an old lava flow. You can see there's just lava. The old lava flows are all around the area here. And incredible sight. But I was very moved by going back in time and remembering. And we were sent here because we had gone through so many trials, so many difficult things with the church back in Pennsylvania at that time, that some at headquarters there took compassion upon us and basically offered us the opportunity of being transferred and having the opportunity of going to Hawaii. You know, if you were transferred somewhere within the United States, sometimes, you know, that was exciting because generally you were assigned to a specific feast site all the time in your area. And so for ministers on occasion to be transferred somewhere else, but I didn't have very much seniority, obviously, very low on the scale of things. And so for this to have happened, I realized too that this was the mercy of God and the blessing He gave to us to have such an opportunity. So anyway, brought back a lot of memories of what we had gone through, and I've mentioned many a time some of the things we went through during that 7 years in Pennsylvania helped prepare us for the things we're getting ready to take place in the church, and to mold and fashion us to go through these things more effectively and better prepared, better equipped spiritually for that as time went along, as God brought back the lessons that needed to be learned, even though at the time we didn't grasp those things and had become weak in the church, as everyone had. But anyway, I thought I'd go back just a little bit more. You know, our history. When did God call you? How did God work with you? Brethren, I remember in the summer of 1969 of coming home in Kansas there to stay, to work. Generally, I'd been going on harvest runs. We'd start out in South Oklahoma and work our way north. We'd go up through the states as the wheat became ripe. And as an example, when you got through cutting in Oklahoma, it would be ripe in certain areas of Kansas. And you just keep going north until you were up in the Dakotas or Montana or even Canada. So I went up into Canada to cut wheat. Generally, I had to come back. I couldn't go up into Canada with any of the crews. Some came back anyway because if they didn't have those in high school or college to stay with them, they had to come back anyway because they didn't have the crews because people had to go back to school. But anyway, I remember coming home, and again, as I've mentioned in times past, my father sitting down with me, telling me about certain things, about the Sabbath, about the U.S. and B.C. and prophecy, basically, where who we were as a people in the United States, and some of the things contained in the plan of God, the holy days. And as I mentioned so many times, and I remember that being about 10 o'clock in the evening when we sat down, and I guess I was intrigued in one respect, the very beginning, and having total attention as to what was being said, because he was not a religious man in any fashion or form, didn't speak of God. And anyway, so I listened. And it's an amazing thing. As I mentioned so many times, my mind was opened up right then and there. And I think of things that happened to me before that, that prepared me so that I would be able to listen. And from that point on, we didn't communicate with each other too much in those things. Didn't realize that both had written off for baptism, and both got a letter back from the minister talking to us about that subject because we hadn't communicated that with each other. But anyway, you know, a process began. Began to observe the Sabbath. Finally was able to find out there was a church up in Nebraska, 195 miles away. Didn't blink once, you know, just the way it was, just thankful that there was a church. And so we, you know, we go through different things. I had to go back to college, or I went back to college then at the end of the summer, back down to Hayes, Kansas. And I'm trying to think here, I think I was beginning my senior year. Yes, I was beginning my senior year in college at that point. But I just barely got started in the semester, and I left because I realized I couldn't stay in that environment and change. And so I left that environment of where I was and all the friends that I had in order to get away so I could change. And I went down toward Hutchinson, Kansas, Wichita area, and worked down there for a period of 6 months until I was thoroughly grounded, more thoroughly grounded in this way of life. And so I was able to go back to college up there in the Hayes area. And so I stayed out that 6 months working down there. And, you know, I think of that process, brethren. Remember what God did in His calling to you and how He grounded you and the different things you had to address, because there's a growing that takes place there as we yield ourselves to God that is so precious to God, brethren, and should be so precious to us as to that process we went through. You know, some people grow up in the church and they go through different experiences. Mine was different in the sense of being called out of this world and having to change some very basic things as far as life is concerned and thinking and the like. And then 1972, one summer, there was the Dean of Students coming through. And just to say mildly here, my college wasn't too grand as far as my grades were concerned, because I led a pretty strong party life. And that's why I had to leave that part of Kansas to get away from the environment. But because of that, party life and college doesn't go well together, so my grades weren't too swift. I had applied to Ambassador because people kept saying, oh, you got to apply to Ambassador, you got to go to college. And so I thought, well, that's the thing to do here, you know, a young person about that time in 1969, then obviously turned 20 that year. And anyway, starting into my senior year of college, and decided that sent an application out to Pasadena, to go to Pasadena, and I got a letter back from the Dean of Students there and basically said, I don't remember who it was exactly, it wasn't the Dean of Students, but anyway, they told me that, well, college isn't for everyone. Well, I'd already had 3 years of college and my grades weren't too swift, so basically they were giving me a rejection, and I didn't know anything about Ambassador anyway, what it was by this point. So another year went by and I applied again, and primarily because of other people again and not because I really wanted it. And again, I was rejected, told basically the same thing. And so finally, in 1972, the summer of 1972, I had a desire. And it just happened that the Dean of Students from Brickett Wood, his parents lived in Salina, Kansas. And I was attending Salina, going down towards Salina from the Hayes area there for Sabbath services. And talked to him about college, and he wanted me to send the information to him. I'm not too sure if I hadn't already done that. But anyway, going back that far, my memory is a little harder to do at this point. But got accepted over there, and didn't hurt being able to meet him directly like that. But, you know, I was able to go to Bricket Wood in north of London in England, the United Kingdom there, and was able to go there for the 2 years. And finally, the college closed down in 1974. In the summer of 1974, I got a telex message from the college telling me not to return, instead to choose one of the other two colleges if I wanted to continue on, and so that all students would be able to go to one of the other two campuses. So I chose Big Sandy and went down there then in the fall of 74, and that's where I met Laura. And anyway, I just went and finished off that year because I'd had a previous college. I was able to transfer my credits. So by the time I got there was such a big change, even in 1974, of what was starting to take place in the United States on the college campuses. It started there because that's where the primary influence was. It came out of there, the ministry, the headquarters, Pasadena, and then in the influence of the teachers and so forth, and the things that began to rumble within the church started back then. And there was such a big change between Bricket Wood and Big Sandy that I decided I didn't want to stay 4 years. I wanted to finish in that year. So went through in the 3 years there at Ambassador, since I transferred my credits anyway. But graduated there then in 75, got married, and Laura and I moved to Kansas for 1 year. After that, we moved down to Houston, Texas, and worked there for about 7 years, 6 years plus. And Otter was born there in the Houston area. And anyway, as I think back about some of those things, brother, I think about, and we all should, what we went through, what God did in molding and fashioning us. I think of the incredible uniqueness at that point in time of having an opportunity to go back out into the world and work in that respect, instead of going out as a minister. Because just before I graduated, we were supposed to go out into the ministry right away. They had to cut back about half the people that were going to go out into the ministry. I was one of those. From that, went out and had our own employment for that 7 years, which a lot of fellows didn't have that opportunity. And to me, it's an opportunity because it helps you to be more keenly focused on applying God's way of life in the world and family and so forth for a period of time. And then I was ordained in 1981 as an elder down in the Texas area, Houston area. And in 82 then, got a call from headquarters. Some of my business trips took me out there. I did a lot of traveling different parts of the country in the U.S. with a job I had. And some of those took me out to California, there's a Parsons Engineering Company out there I called upon right there in Pasadena. And so I'd go by and talk to some of the instructors I knew, some of the people I knew. That led to a telephone call I received later on that they wanted me to go out in the ministry. So in 1982, I was sent out as an assistant to the pastor out in the area of Lubbock and Midland, Texas. Later, they added two more churches to the circuit. There was already one. Hobbs was meeting every other week. And so it started up right away as a circuit of three churches. And then the individual over in the El Paso area became sick, and they added another church then in the Roswell, New Mexico area. So Hobbs, New Mexico, and Roswell, New Mexico were added. So kept quite busy that time for 2 years of training in the ministry as an assistant to the pastor there. And he would take two churches each Sabbath. I would have two churches each Sabbath, and we'd have a rotating process there, what we were doing. And then from that point, sent up to the Cincinnati area. And you know, brethren, even last Sabbath I mentioned about what an awesome thing. You know, there are brethren out there in the Texas area that are with us, that well-grounded in this way of life, and then brethren in Cincinnati that got to know, and God has brought us all back together, at least the ones that are together, I should say, to have opportunity to continue to go forward. And I think of how God works, places He takes us, things He does with us in our life, that nothing happens by chance. If God has a purpose and has a plan, brethren, things work out according to a specific purpose. And then I was there assisting as an associate pastor in the Cincinnati area for 3 years, and from there then moved to Erie and Franklin, Pennsylvania churches as a pastor. And because of that, those things I went through there, brethren, mentioning some of that, then 1994, sent over to the Ohio area, Toledo area, and the Findlay, Ohio churches as a circuit. And right away, just within 6 months, everything blew up. December came around, Mr. Dukach gave that sermon in Atlanta, and finally telling the church, you know, the apostasy began. That's prophesied there in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, that there would be a great falling away, an apostasy within the church. And it began in a very powerful way. There were things that led up to that, obviously, but that was the big kickoff. That was the opening of the first seal. That was the beginning of an incredible process that was prophesied from the beginning that God said would happen to in the church when he gave those prophecies, those prophetic things through Paul and some to John then later on. And we have been living through those things. And it's such an awesome thing, brethren, to understand where we are in time and what God has brought us to. And so, again, going back through these things, brethren, to realize that very early on then, there in the church area, I remember resigning then on March the 6th, 1995, from Worldwide as a pastor, knew that I couldn't help anyone anymore. People didn't care. I even went back to services for three Sabbaths after resigning there. Thinking that some people are going to come up to me, other than those that already knew that weren't in agreement. And I thought, surely there will be others who come up and ask, why did you resign? They would want to know more, or they want to have the reasons, and it didn't happen. You know, incredibly frustrating. So came to the point where other people couldn't be helped and had to learn some lessons through that. And so right there in the Toledo area, we became incorporated as a physical organization to deal with and work with the group that we had there. And we incorporated as United Church of God Toledo. A little bit later, Detroit, was added in the process there. I know Ina Cox up there in Detroit. We got in contact with each other, and she was wanting help up there, and got a group together. And I think there were 19 there when we went together at her place up there to Bible study. And from then on, then we went to Helen Terlecki's the next Sabbath, and the size became quite a bit larger, or I don't remember exactly what date it was, but the next time we went up there. And from there, the church in that area began to draw together. We began to organize. And then a few months later, United in Indianapolis got started. And that didn't last too long. It was 6 months' time, and got back to politics as usual, and within a year had a horrible struggle through that process there, so that some will understand a little bit of this history. Was a part of United then, and politics came back, and the way things were being done came back as before. And some of the same ones who instituted some of the same programs in Worldwide that led to our demise in the first place were the very ones who are now working with some of this. And politics, brethren, I've learned to hate and loathe politics because it demands lying. If you live the way of life of politics, it demands lying and compromise. And living God's way of life, God has no part in that. And so I think of a letter I just received the other day here of an individual who does not agree. He agrees with many of the things that are in the book, but others, the leadership there, is not treating him well. Obviously, when you don't agree with them and everything, and he understands we're in Laodicea and understands several of the things that have happened to the church, and Mr. Dukach indeed was the man of sin, and that we had an apostasy. And when you're not being taught those things, and you take doctrine after doctrine, but he says he's very happy where he is, or very pleased, supportive of where he is. And there's a contradiction in what he was saying in the rest of the letter, and hopefully he'll come to see that in time. And maybe if he gets his tape, he'll come to see some of those things as well, that, you know, if there's a conflict there, and he's going to have to address that conflict, that how can God be there? How is God's Spirit working there? And that's what people have to address. And so everyone who's been drawn out of the fire has to come to address those things and recognize there is a way that God works, and he does not work in politics, period. And so, again, we have to go through those things, brother. And I think about all this time, and now flying into Kona all these years later, brethren, on the way to New Zealand and Australia. And it hit me hard last year, being down there with so few people. But I've learned from that. And we need to learn from how God leads us for their sakes, for those he's giving opportunity to down there, but also because of what he's getting ready to do in different parts of the world. You know, it's not a matter of going to Angola You know, it's not a matter of going to Peru or Chile or Brazil or South Africa, frankly, or other places down there, or to Russia or China or Thailand or any of those places in the world, or the Philippines at this point in time. God is helping us to focus upon certain areas right now. And they are primarily where Israel is located, the modern-day nations of Israel, United States, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, also some of the other areas like Belgium there, and the Netherlands, and Great Britain, United Kingdom, to begin with. Those are the primary areas God is focusing in on to prepare a few and to help us to focus in on that area so that there is something to be done there. I would never have thought of doing what we're doing now in Australia and New Zealand, of advertising and a publication. And I do have a desire to, because I believe that's what's been given to me, that there's going to be a need for greater advertising in those two areas, and more so than others. And then with time here to be able to have a book to send out, and in time here to have it on the website, but to have the information there so that people can be pointed to a reality of you can go there to find out information. Some of these things that you're questioning about, I've heard those answers, and I've heard this group, and you can, this is how you can find them. And so there's something that God is doing, brother, and preparing to do, and helping us in preparing that process, and I'm deeply moved by it. But we have to, in order to keep focused on what we're doing, brethren, again, each one of us has to go back and consider, where did I come from? What has God been doing through me, and why? And I just like last Sabbath, thinking about those of you in Cincinnati, to have the opportunity to continue on. Was it by happenstance, you know, that we had the opportunity of going through there and being in that area? I think of the training that God gave me there, and before, and then up in Erie. And, you know, God knows what He's going to do later on, how He's going to work, and who it is He's going to work through, and He molds and fashions things within us that we can't comprehend until we can understand a few of those things as time has gone on, and we can look back and learn from it. And it has not been an easy course to follow. You know, we go through all kinds of things, trials and hardships, and yet we walk and we continue to go forward as God does give us understanding. It's exciting and it's inspiring. And so we look back and remember those things, and we walk forward, brethren, in faith. We believe God. We believe those things He's given to us as much as that first night when I was told about the Sabbath and the holy days and a part of the plan of who we are as far as United States and British Commonwealth and prophecy, and began to believe those things without ever reading them. And that process began because God opened up the mind and put it there and gave me the ability to see it and to act upon it. And from that time forward, brethren, we continue a process of growing and learning as God molds and fashions us. And most of that, brethren, obviously within the mind, because it's the mind that must be transformed. It is the mind that must be changed in us. It is the mind inside of us that God has given to each and every one of us, brethren. I think of that process and what takes place within us. I think of, just right off here, in Romans chapter 12, it says in verse 1, just write it down, I beseech you, brethren, therefore, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, lively, the word means, to yield to God, to the process of what He's doing within us. Not going to be easy because of what we are as human beings. On the contrary, that's why we're told over and over again in Scripture, it's meant to be difficult. It's going to be difficult because of our very nature. And so it's a matter of the choosing, constant choosing of God's way of life. Will we continue to choose it? Because that determines whether or not we're really yielding to God as He molds and fashions us. Will we do what He's given us to do? And so it's a lively sacrifice. It means sacrificing our own human nature, our own human will to God's will. It truly is. It's sacrificing our will for that which is greater and more important by a decision and a choice we make. So He says to present ourselves as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable unto God. That means we yield to God and we don't continue. We want to get rid of the selfishness. We want to repent and change. And so we're tried in those things over and over again, and we are able to grow in character then by those constant choices. Acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service, logical, reasonable service. That's just the most basic of what it should be like. That's the only way it can work. And be not conformed to this world, but be you transformed. You know, metamorpho, there's a process of the mind that must change, a way of thinking that must be changed. but be you transformed by the renewing of your mind. Everything we have known, everything we have believed as human beings must be changed. The way we think has to be changed. It doesn't matter how we think if it's in disagreement with God. You know, only as it agrees and we come into agreement, that means we have a lot of different ways, different freedoms, if you will, within the overall freedom God has given us in His way of life. And so He gives us that ability to choose His way, to be in unity and harmony with Him. But there's much freedom within that, brethren. So this is a renewing of your mind that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. And so the only way to prove it is like the scriptures are given in the beginning in the New Testament there, where it talks about the example of oxen, to go out and try them, to prove them, you know, to see how they work, to apply it to life. And that's what God wants us to do, to prove His way, to apply it to our life, to prove that it works. And so we grow in that. We become convicted more and more. Our minds become more deeply transformed and convicted of God's way of life. And so there's a process we go through that's an awesome process, and one to be remembered as we yield ourselves to God, and that He teaches us this way. We must yield ourselves completely to the teaching, to the training that God gives to us, and not hold on to our ways, and not hold on to our religious ideas and beliefs. You know, some are going to have struggle with this as they come along, because there are different things that we begin to think if we're not careful early on, and those things can be dangerous to us. There's a being that doesn't want to let go of us and the influence that he has and his world has over individuals. And so there's a struggle that takes place there. And only by yielding ourselves to the process of getting rid of our ideas and thoughts and not trying to bring them along, but just opening up totally, letting God teach us and yield to that process. And it begins with the Sabbath, as we talked about, the holy days, tithing, and it grows from there. So again, brethren, in order to keep focused, I thought as we were coming in here to Kona, I couldn't help but flash back and think back about all those things that prepared me for this time and for where we're going. What has God done to you to prepare you for this time and where you're going and what you're part of and what you're doing? It's been incredible. It's an awesome thing to understand the times we live in and what God is doing with us, and there's a struggle all along the way. Let's turn over to Hebrews chapter 11. Let's go over to Hebrews 11 and consider some of those things that are stated here about a process we go through and what we live by. As I mentioned, we live by faith. We believe that we are in Laodicea. We believe that the work of God, that God was doing in Philadelphia, is over. That the gospel going into all the world, that's not the purpose of anymore, because the very purpose of those things being done has been accomplished. And the primary purpose, as we have learned, was to be a witness that at the end of 6,000 years, man is still the same. He will not listen to God. And the other purpose of that was to raise up the church, to prepare many through that period of 50 plus years, many who died during that time period, who are going to be in the first resurrection, many who have continued on, or some have continued on, I should say, those at the very end here who have had that momentum and that thrust forward, who are going to be called out of the fire, who are going to be plucked out of the fire, if you will, and given an opportunity to share with us, saying that boldly, brethren, because there is no other place. And so they're going to have opportunity to share with us, and people listening for the first time out of some of the groups may not like that. And they say, might think, how arrogant. Well, it's either true or it isn't. And if it isn't, then go your merry way, do your own thing, and time will prove where God is and what God is doing. We have to live by the conviction, by the faith of what we believe in. And if it comes from God, if it's inspired by God, if it's a matter of God's Spirit working in our life, then indeed we walk by faith and confidence. Confidence that we live at the end time. Confidence that there has been an apostasy. Confidence and a knowing that we have all been scattered. Confidence that we all fell asleep and slumbered. Confidence in those things, because we know those things to be true. If people don't like to accept that and won't accept it because of pride, then they can't grow, they can't change, and they can't repent. Confidence, brethren, as people, new people come along and they learn and they say, yes, that is true, those things did happen. Yes, there is a purpose of the way that God is working now at the end time. And so we live by confidence in those things, a matter of faith. And only if it's from God is it true faith. Only if it's a matter of truly believing because we believe what God says, because it's inspired by God, only then can it be true. And every one of us is held accountable for what we believe. And so that's why I say so many of the things we do sometimes about you better find out where it is, because that's your faith. And if you're not in agreement, then you're in the wrong place. If you are in agreement, then you must humble yourself and yield yourself to the process. And God gives us those things that we need to believe, things in Revelation about the first four seals and on. And matter of fact, before we begin here in Hebrews, we'll come back to this. Let's turn over to Revelation. Revelation. Chapter 6. Revelation chapter 6. Just notice. Incredible, brethren. The seals of Revelation that no one can know and understand until God opens them and begins to reveal certain things. And we've had to learn that the white horse in verse 2, that it's already happened. You know, a false Christ to begin to enter into the church. The power that was wielded there to conquer within the church, not the world. We just didn't understand at the time. We didn't understand that there is so much in the Bible that has a matter of duality. Some things prophetically concerning the church, other things concerning, you know, the spiritual Israel of God, some things concerning the physical Israel of God, because that's where God is still working primarily as a focus. That's why other nations, the Gentile nations of the world, aren't going to be humbled till the very end. Because then Jesus Christ will already be here at that time. He's coming back at that time. He humbles him on that last day. They're brought down on that last day. Those out of Europe and those out of Asia, they're not brought down until the last day. But others are brought down well in advance so they can repent and change and begin being led by God's Spirit. Begin to be a process there of what God's going to do and working out His plan. And then the next one, too, the second seal in verse 3, you know, the war. The battles and that began to take place within the church. And then the famine, the third seal, and all the things that took place through all this period of time, all the destruction, the thirds as we talk about back in Ezekiel. And then finally verse 7, and then I heard the fourth seal, and I saw the fourth beast, and I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and his name sat Death, and hell followed him, the grave. And power was given unto them in the fourth part of the earth to kill with sword and with hunger and with death. And with the beasts of the earth. And so we learn again here a part of a process that goes along with some of the things in Matthew 24 and some of the things in Ezekiel chapter 5. And we begin to learn that here again, it says back there, not just in Matthew, but going all the way back, I think about Ezekiel 5 as an example. When it talks about the third, it talks about that last third, that they too, even when they've escaped, they too, a sword is going to be taken out after them. They don't have it made. The first two-thirds were destroyed quickly, early on. And that last third, the sword comes out after them. And so the very first things that happened in the first three seals being opened are repeated in a powerful way on the fourth seal here, again, just like it is in Ezekiel chapter 5. Again, that last third, the same things that happen are going to repeat themselves again, one more time. And then finally, brethren, verse 9, and when he had opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of them that were slain for the word of God and for the testimony which they held. You know, and some people, we have to let God explain to us what these things mean. People get all kinds of ideas. They're not up in heaven. They're dead. These are individuals who will be a part of the 144,000 being spoken of here who are dead. And their essence of what they are, not alive, just like a recording, as Mr. Armstrong explained it, is with God, and He'll put it back into another body later on. In this time, a spirit body in this case. It says, and they cried with a loud voice. So is this something that's literally happening during the fifth seal? Obviously not. There is that which is symbolic, and primarily to teach us, to help us to understand something at this juncture in time. After what we've gone through in the church, in the first four seals, all the destruction, all the things that were taking place, and for those who would continue on, we finally come to this point in time. And that seal is open, and it says, how long, O Lord, holy and true, do you not judge and avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth? Well, it's been a long time for a lot of different ones. They're not conscious. Different ones going back to the beginning of time. Preachers of righteousness, as it talks about in the beginning. You take Noah and different ones there that died and what they believed that are going to be a part of the 144,000 and those individuals that are going to be resurrected. Well, they're not speaking out. And so this is something that's being said that's in the hearts and the minds. It's always been in God's people.
how long? And sometimes God just hasn't told them how long, because that isn't for them to know. Just like Daniel. He says, shut up the book, Daniel. You know, it's not for your time. And so he learned a little bit from that, obviously. And so it says, how long? This has been our heart and our cry inside of us, and it still is, because it's ongoing. It doesn't stop. The effects of what happened in the first four seals hasn't ended. It's still ongoing. The impact of that, the magnitude of that is still in our lives. It's still going on out there. Those of the fourth seal, it's not over with yet. Some have to be drawn out of that now in order to be saved, in order to become a part of the remnant. We understand that. In order to join in with us, they have to be drawn out of that. God is the one that's going to do that, to awaken them and to give them opportunity. We know they're coming. We just don't know when. And so the heart and the mind, we cry out, how long, O Lord, holy and true? Do you not judge and avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth? So we look forward. What are we looking for? We're looking forward to all this being completed. We're looking forward of getting past all this and getting into the millennial period and the great resurrection. It says, and white robes were given unto every one of them. At the time of the fifth seal? No. But when an individual dies who is going to be in that first resurrection, it's as though they've already received it. We know the timing is coming later. When do they get the white robes? When is this, that which is symbolic physically that it's talking about here in a physical explanation, when is that fulfilled? When Jesus Christ returns. These people are dead. They're going to be given spirit bodies resurrected on that last incredible day when Jesus Christ is returning. And it says, and white robes were given unto every one of them, and it was said unto them that they should rest yet a little season. So by the time we go through so much of what's been revealed in the first four seals, by the time we come to the fifth, then we all are to focus upon this. We still have a little bit of time in front of us. There is a little season yet. So who is this written for? It's written for us. It's not written for anybody else. It's not written for those during the millennium to know, to be moved by. It wasn't written for others in times past to know. It's written for us to know that we still have a little season. When these things take place, when these things happen, we still have a little bit before us. And we know that, and it's getting smaller and smaller all the time. A little season until your fellow servants also. Who is that? Us. That's what it's about. It's about us. And their brethren that should be killed as they were should be finished or fulfilled. Does that mean everyone dies? No. But we give our lives as a living sacrifice, day by day. We kill ourselves, as it says, all the day long for God's way of life. That's what it's symbolic of. That we have to go through the same process they did to conquer, to overcome, to change, so that we can be a part of that body, to be a part of that first great resurrection for those called to that. Others of you that are baptized, who have the impregnation of God's Spirit, you have the opportunity of living on into a new world, into the millennial period. Then, it says, and I beheld when he had opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth and hair, and the stars of heaven fell from the earth. I've given again how these things are a matter of that which is figurative in nature, brethren, and not literal. The stars don't fall. There are certain things that can appear to us, just like I've talked about, as what I deeply believe. The 9/11 was the beginning of all this, because it's symbolic of what is going to happen to this nation. How much more symbolic could we get than a jet that crashes in Washington, D.C., right on the Pentagon? You know, how incredible is that? And two of the largest buildings of that which man generally builds up to, I think of the Tower of Babel, that's just the way of man. Let's build something. We're great. Look how great we are. Look what we can do. And it's symbolic of this nation. And so those things that are symbolic are the very things that have been struck at, very powerfully so. The economy, you know, right there in that area. And that's exactly what's going to happen. So they're a picture of that which is going to come to pass. And it begins with this period of time, the sixth seal. That's what this is talking about. And it says, and the heaven departed as a scroll, as it rolled together, and every mountain and every island were moved out of their places. Is that literal? No. It's picturing something here because of an event, of events that take place on the earth. This is something that's going to happen on a continuing basis, have an impact on the world all the way to the time that Jesus Christ comes and stands on the Mount of Olives. This will continue to increase until this is fulfilled, and this is what it's showing us. But it starts when the seal is opened. It starts at a specific time. That time, when it began, is a specific time. And if we look at those things, brethren, then we learn from that. And we understand what we have gone through, that which is symbolic, and it will grow in momentum and power and strength on the earth. And so it shows here again, speaking of every mountain and every island, if we understand what those things are, every government on the earth, every nation on the earth, those things have already happened. I think of President Bush when he was over in Europe here, as he was over in Europe speaking here the other day, talking about very candidly to some of those in Europe that the United States changed, the attitude of people changed, and it did, and many other countries changed after that period of time. It changed, a lot of it changed because of the response the United States had to some of these things. But as he brought out, it's changed forever, and indeed it has, as far as the course of what this nation will follow and what it believes now and how it thinks. This had a great impact upon us, and he said, in essence, he was trying to help them to say, keep this in your thinking when you think about us and why we're doing the things we are, because it's impacted us. We are different over here, and that was well put. And so nations have changed, and it's beginning to have an effect on nations, because of the response, and one thing affects another. Afghanistan had an effect. Iraq has had an effect, and those things will continue to change. What's happening in Syria and Lebanon has an effect. Everything has a rippling effect that continues to fulfill and accomplish this prophecy. And the kings of the earth and the great men and the rich men and the chief captains and the mighty men and every bondman and every free man hid themselves in the dens and the rocks and the mountains. Does it happen immediately right then? No. But it shows what this leads to, what takes place, what it's all about, what started, what changed the world, what God said, now is the time, now it can happen, has already started, just like it did upon the church. Now it's starting in the world, physically. And said to the mountains and the rocks, fall on us and hide us from the face of him that sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. So they don't know that yet. But as they get closer and as different ones have that impact in their lives, first upon Israel, people are going to start having that fear and that understanding. And later on, especially on that last day, if it's others in the world, Gentile nations especially, for the great day of his wrath has come, and who shall be able to stand? So it leads us up to, and the point being is, this seal and what happens here has a growing, powerful impact. It's open, a time begins, and it leads up to the very return of Jesus Christ and his standing upon the Mount of Olives. And then we learn the primary purpose then of all that takes place in this, goes on in the next chapter here, leading up to the seventh seal, and that is the preparation for the remaining individuals who will be a part of the 144,000 must be accomplished during the sixth seal. And so, brethren, that brings us back to, what do we believe? Do we believe those things? Yes, we do. That's why we're here. Others will come along and join in because that's what they believe. Because God gives that ability to believe, to have faith and confidence in those things. And so we move forward. I think about just the last year, brethren. Where were we a year ago? Who could have ever dreamed we would be where we are today? It's not great in the sense of greatness on the earth, but it's awesome, brethren, when we understand what God is doing, especially with something so small, so little, so puny. And so I think back of what's happened just a year ago. You know, the book wasn't out a year ago. We talk about this time of year, February, the end of February. It wasn't out for a few more months. And I think what's been accomplished already. You know, here we are, orders that are filling up for another 10,000 books, between the 40,000 and 50,000 mark now. You know, and then those being printed down in New Zealand that are going to go out in New Zealand and Australia as well. And the radio interviews. Someone asked the other day, are you still doing radio interviews? No, not now. There's no purpose in it now. There's no need for it now. You know, it's not about, it's about training. It's about molding and fashioning. It's about what God has done for us as well and helping us to prepare, for me to prepare, for you to prepare. It's giving us a little bit of a foretaste of something that when time does hit, and certain things do take place, that things happen quickly. They happen rapidly. And so God is showing us that. And he's preparing us for that. That when things, events do happen, they're going to happen powerfully. And they're going to grow in that magnitude. And I love that example, brethren, of a woman in a point of getting ready for birth. And the travail, the pain that goes along with that. And then the moments when there's nothing there. You know, the contractions and the things that begin to happen that lead up to it. And there's nothing. It's a beautiful, perfect example of what we're going through, and so different things will happen that lead up to the very end. So let's go back to Hebrews 11 here now, because brethren, we walk by faith. We live by faith. I'm learning that in ways I've never understood it. As God reveals different things and gives us different things, we walk forward, and we are convicted. We are committed.
We are committed to a course. I am committed to a course. Whether anyone else goes that direction or not is immaterial in one respect, because I have to make choices that I make according to what I'm going to do, and I've made them. And my hope and prayer is that others will continue to go that course as well. Not everyone perhaps will be able to. I hurt for that, because that's already happened in our history. I hope and pray, and I know there will be that group that continues all the way through, but that doesn't mean everyone will. So each one of us are free moral agents. We have our own choices to make, and we're tried in those things. And I think of if God decides to give us certain understanding of the things besides prophecy as well, if he determines that I am to give something different later on here in addition to what we have. You know, different things have happened. I've wondered at times. I remember when we went through Passover, would everyone continue on? Would everybody receive everything that was there? I think of the thing about Ben-Ha Arbaim, you know, between the two evenings. Would people understand that? Would that turn them away? Or would they accept the truth that God had given? And with God's Spirit, we can accept the truth that God gives. But that doesn't mean that everyone can, that everyone does. And there may be things coming, brethren, that I'm going through right now, and determining, is God telling me that I'm to go into more or not? And I have to decide that, because this one here I will have probably resisted, will resist more, and he'll have to make it very clear to me. So, you know, there are different things we go through, brethren, that we have to determine and make decisions on and choices on as to what we do in life. And so continuing here then in Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 1, it says, now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not yet seen. Let's back up to verse 31 of chapter 10 and get some of this in context. Where Paul is talking here, he says, it's a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God, but call to remembrance the former days, in which after you were illuminated, you endured a great fight of afflictions. That's just basically what we've talked about here. I think of the different battles. They're personal to me. I didn't go into it a lot here about some of the things. You know, just giving a brief overview. There are some incredible battles in through here, brother, in our lives, the things we have addressed at different junctures along the way, little ones and then big ones. And we're to remember those in order to keep focused and walk by faith. That's what keeping focused has so much to do with, brother. It's walking by faith, walking forward, going forward, and continuing to follow the lead that God has given to us and what he shows us. Partly, it says, while you were made a gazing stock, we can pass some of this because it's different. They experience different things than what we have gone through. And it says in verse 35, cast not away therefore your confidence, you know, the assurance, the boldness that God has given you, which has great recompense of reward. You know, that has to do with what you believe. And then do we respond to that with a boldness and with confidence and with determination to go forward? For you have need of patience. Boy, brethren, we do. Sometimes, you know, that's what it's about, this ability to keep focused and go forward and be stirred up for God's way of life, is to be patient and let God, you know, he's working things out. Things don't happen in our time frame. It happens in God's time frame. And I think of what he's doing for us right now. I marvel. I see how that we're preparing because of a small group of individuals right now who are responding to the book and saying certain things, that I am being forced to address some things differently on the website and prepare that. And that will help for many more later on to be able to receive help that we have no other means of giving. We don't have pastors in different areas all over the world. They're going to have to get it through a primary source. And today, that primary source is through the website. That's what God has given. So they have the ability of listening in. So they have the ability to listening to different sermons and getting different information, you know, and being able to do the things that they need to do in order to grow. And so we're being forced to address some of those things, a series of sermons that we're going through in order to help people so that they can make the progress and the growth and the change that they need to make in their lives so that they can go forward and be a part. And so we've had these things happen to us to prepare, just like the radio interviews. I know what they've been for, and I know what I've learned through them. And I realize in a very powerful way that when the time is right and God determines that certain things take place, That's peanuts compared to what we're going to be doing and what we're going to be a part of when the time is right. And so we have the experience now, and the confidence and the boldness that goes with it. You know, in the beginning, it was kind of scary. It's not easy. It's not natural. Now it's more natural. Now it's the lessons that are there, the things learned, the process. It's a part of me. It's a part of you. It's a part of us now, what we're going through. Yet a little while, and he that shall come will not tarry. It won't be long, and how much more for us? And those things that were set back there for them, brethren, we live at that time. They didn't. Now the just shall live by faith. You know, going forward in confidence and faith in what God has given to us. But if any man draw back, my soul shall have no pleasure in him. So many have drawn back. That's what happens when people fall asleep and begin to drift, and sleep follows. You know, sluggishness, a lukewarm spirit, a lukewarm attitude. We cannot have a lukewarm attitude and spirit in God's church. We must seek to be on fire and bold and zealous for God's way of life. We can't draw back. We can't retreat in a battle. You can't dig a deeper foxhole, a deeper cave, have something to distract ourselves from the reality of the time we live in. Family, you know, job, whatever it might be in life that so often as human beings we get involved in, become our world. No, God is our world. The church is our world. This way of life is our world. And we need to keep focused upon that. That's why we're here. Otherwise, be the world. Be in the world. We have to make our choices. We can't be in the world. We're in the church. And we have to be a part of what God is doing then, very much so, focused on those things. But we are not of them who draw back unto perdition, but to them who that believe, have faith in, brethren, have confidence that we live by, believe to the saving of the life. And so our lives and the desire to help in the process of saving of others and what God is doing. It's about what God is doing. Verse 11, now faith is a substance, you know, the confidence, the ground, the proof, brethren, of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. There's so much we don't see yet. We know it's there. Just like the hundredfold that's coming yet. They're not here yet, but I know they're coming. We know they're coming, brother. We live by that faith, that confidence. We believe what God says in Ezekiel and elsewhere. And so that's what we're talking about here. Faith, is that's what it is. That's what we need. That's all we need. It's what we walk by. It's what we live by. And you know what? God attributes that to us for righteousness. Thank God. Because my life is not righteous. You know, I have battles as a human being I have to fight day in and day out. Attitudes. Don't get the right food at the right time, I get cranky. And if I'm not careful, in the simplest of matters of life, brethren, you know, and I have to repent day by day of this nature that's in me. I don't want it. I don't choose it. I don't desire it. I want it to be changed. And so it's in the fight, continuing to fight. And to hold on to those things, to keep focused on what God has given us, to keep focused upon. That's what it's all about. For by it the elders obtain a good report. Through faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the Word of God. What do people have to believe? You know, we see the world out here, we see the creation of God, and we believe, you know, very simply so, in essence, God put it all here. He commanded it and it was so. He did what He did over that 7-day period of time and rested that seventh day, and we have the Sabbath. We just believe it. It's a part of our life. It's in our minds. It's in our being. It's a part of God that's in us that gives us the ability. Do you realize that? The only way you can believe those things in spirit and truth and everything that God has given in His plan, including the Sabbath, the holy days, and everything that we talk about, is because God has given it to you to believe. It's the part of God in you that gives you the ability to believe. You're either being drawn by that and believe it, or it's now in you ever more so deeply and can only stay in you by God continuing to dwell in you if you have the impregnation of God's Spirit in you. That's the only way you can believe it and continue to believe it, is by God, because it's from God. It is the Word of life that's able to live and dwell in your being. That God dwells in us, that gives us the ability to know and to believe and to live by these things. We make choices all the time in these matters, but it's God in us that gives us the ability to believe and to see and to know. And that's what we hold on to, and we believe, and we make choices then according to what God has placed in our being, in our minds, that Word. And for us as human beings, it's a very small portion of God, in essence, that dwells within us at this point. We look forward to that becoming far greater, being at one with God. So the things which are seen were not made by things which do appear. We know that. We know that that which is physical exists because of that which is spiritual, because that which is from God that no human being can see, that is not of physical essence. And then it goes in through here, brethren, talking about different ones. You know, and you can go through and read these stories. Verse 6, without faith it's impossible to please Him. You know, faith is a part of our life. It's what we are. It's what we choose to live by. It's what God gives us.
what we believe. See, belief and faith, they go hand in hand. It works together. What we believe is what God has given us to believe, the ability to believe it and to see it. The choices we make upon what God has given us to believe because of His drawing us by His Spirit or what He's placed within us, that's our choice. That's what faith is about. Whether or not we choose to follow that, whether or not we acknowledge that and live by that. So the truth that God gives us is given to us by God, the ability to believe and to see the things about the Sabbath. The choices we make concerning it is to live it. That's a matter of walking by faith. Do we make the right choices then to follow it, to live by that which God has given us to believe? That's what faith is. Just as we do about everything that's been given to us. We walk in a way of life right now in the church that this thing makes us different from others that were scattered because that we believe we're Laodicea. We're in Laodicea. We believe that we had to repent of being spewed out of God's mouth because we sinned. That's why we got spewed out of God's mouth and separated. That's what everybody has to come to see. And if you repent of that, then where are you going to be afterward? Ezekiel 5, the thirds of the amount of people that of what happened to us and what happened to the last third, and that there's going to be a remnant out of that last third. We believe that. The way we walk, the way we live is by all these things that God has given to us, the apostasy, the things about Revelation and the seals that we just read and where we are, those things God has given us to believe, and then we make the choice as to whether or not we follow it. How God is leading us? Is that the way God's working? Is he working in that way? So without faith, it's impossible to please Him. So if we don't choose to live by what He's given us the ability to believe, that's why we're talking about something basic about the Sabbath. You know, if people know and come to believe things about the Sabbath and the holy days, and they start understanding that yes, God has a plan. Passover, unleavened bread, it all fits. It's beautiful. God has placed that in the mind for them to give them the ability. Tithing, all those things that we've already touched upon in some series here. Then people's choices then as to what they do with that. See, if they don't choose to live by that, without faith, it's impossible to please Him, and they cannot continue to grow. And we can't either if we don't follow what God has given to us and keep focused upon what He's given us to believe. That's what so much of keeping focus is about, keeping focused upon what He's given us to believe and living by it. That is walking in faith. Without faith, it's impossible to please Him, for he that comes to God must believe that He is. If it's not real to us and what He's giving to us is not real, different from what we had in the world before, different from what others have and what they believe about God or about Jesus Christ, we must be able to believe the truth, to believe that He is and the truth is there. It's like Passover 14:15. If you believe that, you're not believing the truth, and you can't believe what is true and what is right about God then, and you're separated. For he that comes to God must believe that He is a rewarder of them that diligently seek Him. So, is it done by Laodicean attitude in the sense of the bad part of Laodicea? There's two parts of Laodicea. Those that are zealous and repent, that must be continually a part of our life. The zealous toward God, repenting constantly before God, desiring His way of life, choosing that. Or those who choose to go backward, those who choose to let down and just hold on to knowledge and live by the knowledge of what we used to be and want to hold on to something that kind of resembles that, but no life there, because God's not in that. He's not in a lukewarm spirit. He can't live in that, a lukewarm attitude toward His Word. That's why He had to spew it out of His mouth, because there's sin in that. There's sin, awesome sin, and pride of life in that. And so, again, He is a rewarder of them that diligently seek Him. So if we believe that, then we know that we have to be diligent about it. We have to truly apply ourselves and keep focused and not pull back and not let down and not let other things become the focus of our life. What is the focus of your life? We're talking about your life and your ability to continue on right now. The ability to be a part of the first fruits, or the ability to be a part of those who are going to live on into a new age, a new world, a millennial period, and continue on in the church by faith. Noah being warned of God of things not seen as yet. There wasn't a flood yet. There wasn't any waters coming down yet. And he believed God. And so he acted upon it. He lived by faith. I believe God. You believe God. We believe what He's given to us about the age we live in. The first six seals have been opened up. I believe that with all my being. And therefore I live a certain way because of that. That's different from others who have had the truth, who walk in a different way. That separates us, brethren. We either are of God and we follow the things that God gives us and keep focused upon what He's given us to believe and choose to live by that which is walking in faith, or not. just like some of the things in some of the interviews that came out. Sometimes I, even thinking about it, I cringe a little bit because, you know, you got a 4-year window there starting back in September, October of this past year. You know, it's out there. It's everything's there on the line. Not a real pleasant place to be. Not a real pleasant place to be up there on the finishing touches of smacking some tar-type substance on in the cracks and the holes of a big, huge structure. And people seeing it think, you've got to be stark, raving, mad. You know, at least you could have built it by the lake. Of course, how are you going to get something that massive in a lake to float it in the first place? So you're waiting for the waters to rise, eh, Noah? You got the finishing touches. Fill it up with the animals. Where are you going, Noah? You know, down to the last little bit here. Well, that's where we are. We're down the last little bit. Made ourselves, opened ourselves up totally to be a laughing stock. It's either of God or it isn't, brethren. And if it's of God, the boat will float. You know, it'll float because God's in it, because God's going to bring the flood. And either he's in it and what we're doing now, you know, and we live by faith. We go by the things that we remember how God has brought us to where we are. Because so much of that is a matter of strengthening the confidence and the boldness and the faith, brethren, because there are no other answers but God. It's incredible. And so it goes through some of the stories here of different ones and what God has done through time with different ones. It talks about in verse 13, these all died in faith, not having received the promises. Think about all those written of here. They just walk this way of life, and they don't live when we do. We get to see it come to pass. We get to see these things begin to happen more and more and more. That's why I think about those who are going to be sealed. So that they are there, brethren. By the time the seventh seal is open, God has already said, I know you. Just like he did Abraham. I know you. We're a part of that which is going to be in that great resurrection. That first resurrection. And it's an awesome thing, brethren. And be able to go through that remaining 3.5 years very powerfully so, incredibly so. So these all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off and were persuaded of them and embraced them and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. They knew who they were. We know who we are. We know where we are in time. We know how the world accepts and receives what we have. We know God's getting ready to humble the world so more will begin to receive it and accept it. We know that only a smattering right now, a very small smattering, can begin to respond. But as God chastens this world, allows other things to begin to take place in the world and then in this country here, the world is going to be humbled. And brethren, our work is what we're doing, what we're a part of, and what God is doing, his work, the work we're able to be a part of. Our work, that which work we've been called to be a part of, we're just on the tip of the iceberg of it, brethren. There's so much more that's getting ready to take place. Verse 14. For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country, and truly, and we do. I think of what we walk by and what we see it coming, we know it's coming, we recognize that we live in that time, we look forward to the time that Jesus Christ, indeed, the resurrection takes place and he's there, and he stands upon the Mount of Olives, and a new age begins under one government, one religion over all the earth. Oh, brethren, how we long for that. And truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they might have had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is, an heavenly, you know, which comes from God. Wherefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. So we think about those things, brethren, that which we're blessed to be a part of, that which is coming to this earth, that which we're so blessed to be a part of. But let's notice here as we continue on in some of this, it talks about different ones, what they went through. It mentions some of this. And what shall I say more, verse 32. So it speaks of all these different ones, and it says, for time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah and David also and Samuel and other prophets. And so there's so much written here, brethren, that's there about lives and how God has worked with people. And so that even that, brethren, as we go back in time, that's why we go back in history so often, because there's so much there that just gives us great confidence and boldness in what God does. And it talks about some of the things they went through, the mockings. You know, that's just a part of our lives, the scourgings, beatings we take, whether they be physical or, you know, mental, verbal, and in bonds and imprisonment. you know, different things. Look at the suffering people have had to go through. Bondage because of what they believed, because of what they lived. Imprisonment, they were stoned, they were sawn asunder, they were tempted, they were slain with a sword, they wandered about in sheepskins, goatskins, they were destitute, afflicted, you know, tribulation, tormented. Brethren, our life wasn't meant to be a cakewalk. And sometimes those things become so consuming, the trials, the difficulties, especially at this age. And we're getting ready to get launched into a period of time. That's why I think about what I talked about last Sabbath. We're getting ready to go into a time that's, we can't even begin to comprehend a reliance and dependence upon God, because especially in this country, we're so blessed in this country of what we have at our fingertip, electricity, things we just take for granted, the ability to wash clothes like we do, prepare food like we do. It just so basic in our lives that we don't, but when that's all taken away, we're going to experience something that so many people have never experienced. And it'll be a trial upon many. It's going to be a trial upon the world, especially for this age and these people that live in this age, especially with so much plenty. And so it says here, in these, verse 39, all having obtained a good report through faith. We seek a good report through faith. We want to keep focused on what which God has given us to be a part of. That this is our life. That everything we have to do now. That's why I mentioned about even people being together. Where you're able to be together. To take opportunity of that while, when you have opportunity. Sometimes to sacrifice for some of that in order to have some of that opportunity. But to be together as much as you are able. If you're not able to and you're a long way away and distance and so forth restricts you from that, then take advantage of whatever you have of communication through letter if need be, or through email, or through telephone. Use those opportunities. And those who have those things at their fingertips, like some of the larger areas, remember those out there by themselves. It's your job. It's your responsibility. It isn't mine. I can't do it all. It's yours. We're all a part of the body, and we help to feed and serve the body. And so we have opportunity then to get a hold of people that are going through various trials and tests and difficulties in life. You know, it's not like it was 20 years ago, 15 years ago, and how the church functioned. We all have a part and things we can do and be a part of, and we need to take a hold of that responsibility. And to be around one another, that's the only way we can learn from one another and encourage one another and be encouraged by what God gives to that through the power of His Spirit, if we're able to. And if we're not, then God will give us the help we need wherever we are. But where we have those opportunities, we need to take advantage of them. And these all having obtained a good report through faith, received not the promise. God, having provided some better thing for us, that they without us should not be made perfect. In other words, everything takes place in God's time. And we're getting close to that time now. We're all going to be together, and there's a timing that God's working out, so we have to have patience in those things. And so we go on to the next verse here, chapter 12, in verse 1. Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight. What weighs you down? What restricts your life? What is hindering you? What gets in the way? What is it that hurts your relationship with God? What is it that hurts your relationship in the church? What is it in life that is our battle? Do we understand those things that weigh us down? Do we recognize that there are those things that sometimes we carry as weights, and we make things heavier than what they need to be and what they should be? Because if we keep focused, brethren, and we hold on to and choose to live by what God has given us to believe, we walk in faith and keep focused upon where we're going and what we're doing and what our need is at this time, what we need to continue to do at this time, God will give us everything we need. God will give us every strength and help we need. But sometimes we weigh ourselves down in life and we let things weigh us down to where we are. Our burden seems to be so great. Well, it isn't easy, but it's really nothing compared to what God is molding and fashioning within us and offering us and giving to us, that which we need to keep focused upon that should give us strength, that should lift us up, that should help to ease those burdens and that strength if we recognize that it all works together for a purpose. As it talks about in Romans 8, and let us lay aside every weight and the sin that does so easily beset us, you know, the battles that we fight in life and the sins that are there that we need to continue to focus on, to recognize we have sin every day in our life and attitudes and things we think that need to be repented of. And let us run with patience. It is a race and it is a run, and we don't go backwards. We don't rest. We don't as it talked about earlier, there, you know, we don't draw back. We don't try to dig into a foxhole. We don't try to become consumed with or focused on physical things in this world right now, in this life. You know, if we have opportunity of those things enhancing our life as far as it fits into an overall picture, fine. And if they're taken away tomorrow, if they're gone tomorrow, so be it. You know, so be it. Because what we're in it for, what we're about, is far, far, far greater. It's about God and what God is doing and what God gives us opportunity to share in. And so again here, with patience we run it. We're to be patient, to recognize it doesn't move in our speed and with what we want it to. There are things that God is working out for a purpose, because it's about others that are being prepared to be drawn into the family, others that are being prepared to be taken out of the fire, if you will, in order to become a part of a remnant. It's about those who are getting ready to be told in the world and receive this way of life in the world, in this country, and other parts of Israel. And it's just an awesome process of what we live in. So we run. We go forward. That means you go forward. You don't lay back. You don't pull back. You don't try to ignore what's in front of you. You don't try to take it easy with what's in front of you to try to escape reality because it's just too hard, because I don't like to think about it. You know, tough cookie. Think about it. You need to think about it. You need to have it a part of your mind, because that's what God is giving you to believe, to think about it, because it's a part of a picture of something greater, of what He's doing and why He's doing it, why He's allowing these things on the earth. It's not a time to escape. It's a time to run and go forward. It's a time to be stirred up in spirit and mind and to run the race that's before us. No apology. If it sounds harsh, you know, if it sounds hard, well, you know, we need a kick in the rear end in order to realize, hey, I'm going the wrong direction. I wouldn't have felt the boot if I was going forward. Wouldn't have reached me, because I'm running the race and I'm going forward with patience, with a patient attitude and spirit, the knowing that all things work together because God is working with me. God is working with others who are part of this. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before Him endured the cross, what He went through. And so we, with patience, endure what's before us, brethren. It's not easy. It wasn't meant to be easy. Everything that we experience in life, God will use to mold and fashion us, to help us to learn things in order to be a part of His family. I don't care what I have to go through in order to be a part of that. Whatever is around me that will help to mold and fashion me, that He will use, so be it. Despising the shame and set down on the right hand of the throne of God. You know, it doesn't matter what the world thinks. It doesn't matter what others think. It's a matter of what does God think? And I want to please Him. I want to have the attitude of David, to be a man after God's own heart. I truly do. And I know we all do, brethren, if we think about those things and pray that God will help us to have such an attitude and to go forward and to be pleasing to Him. And to be pleasing to Him, without faith, it's impossible to please Him. We want to walk by faith. We want to live those things we're told. We want to live those things we're being told today, because we know it comes from God, because we know that God inspires it, that God inspired this sermon today for us to hear today, because we need it today. This is when we need it. And so it wasn't a matter of continuing on with a different series right now. There was something else needed today because God inspired it, because He gives it by His Spirit through His servant, and then it comes out to us. It's given to us, and we imbibe it, we drink in of it, we want it, and we seek to grow by it then. We can either respond to it because we believe it, because we know it comes from God, or we just continue to live our way if we're not yielding ourselves fully to this process. And so sometimes we just need that encouragement, that boost. And so it talks about, for consider Him that endured such contradiction, speaking of Jesus Christ, such strife and opposition. That's just a part of life. We're not here to please people. We want to be pleasing, you know, but if people don't accept that because of what we believe and what we live, yeah, tough, 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 tough. They're about to get a big dose of something to where they'll come in agreement with what you believe. Or they'll wait 1,000 years and then they'll get that opportunity. So walk boldly, walk powerfully with what you believe. It doesn't matter what others think. For consider Him that endured such contradiction of sinners against Himself, lest you be wearied and faint in your minds. That means to become discouraged. Are you discouraged? Are you discouraged about things going around on you in life? Then if you are, then repent of that attitude. I'm not trying to speak to you smooth things. You know, this is just a reality. It needs, something's wrong with your thinking if anybody thinks that way. You're discouraged. Boo-hoo. Life is hard. You know, life is tough right now, and I'm just tired of fighting the fight. Well, boo-hoo. That means we don't grasp the riches
of what we have at our fingertips, the joy, the riches of life that God has placed before us, that's getting ready to change the whole world that we get to be a part of. You know, we'll, if that's the case, we'll boo-hoo all the way to the great resurrection. You know, and then it'll be boo-hoo, weeping and gnashing of teeth as we try to kick ourselves in the rear for not having listened. No, let's listen, and let's all be zealous toward God. Repent of wrong thinking that gets into our mind, discouragement that sometimes comes. Self-pity, when we turn inward. That's what happens with self-pity. We turn inward and we take it out on others around us in life, if we're not careful, because we want someone else to cry for us, to boo-hoo for us as well, and we want others to think how rough our battle is. We know we all have battles, and yes, we want to share those things, but we don't want to have a self-pity thing either, and turning inward, and that's selfishness and pride, if we understand that. It's actually pride, and we don't even understand where that kind of pride is. On the contrary, brethren, let's throw off those things. Let's be zealous toward God, and love what God has placed before us and fight for it, because it's a fight, and do the things that He's given us to do, to be a part of, to share with each other those things. So anyway, let's go back here to Romans 8 and finish off there today. We don't have much time here. We'll go back to Romans chapter 8, put that in the context of everything we've been talking about. He even goes on there in Hebrews and talks about the correction. Sometimes we just need some of those things to correct our course, so that we can be on the right course, to keep focused on the right course, on what it is we're to do and what it is we're to follow, and repent of not being on that right course, of turning inward, of whatever it might be, and becoming discouraged, because we should not be discouraged as God's people. We should be encouraged that we are so awesomely blessed to see, to believe what we see and believe, to know what we're blessed to be a part of. Look over a year, brethren. 2 years ago, 5 years ago, could you have conceived of this happening, even though it's small? But you know what? It ought to prick your heart to realize, though this be small, it's a bit of a foretaste of what's going to be incredibly large, of what you're getting ready to be thrust into, that's going to pale this period, this last year, last few months, into insignificance in size in comparison, brethren. Because when things begin to happen and God begins to move more powerfully on this earth, we are blessed to share in that powerful movement, brethren. Hold on to it. Fight the fight. Have opportunity to share in something far, far greater that's coming. And so we go through the things we go through, being prepared for what's coming upon us. We're down to the last here of what we must go through in being molded and fashioned to go into what we're getting ready to go into. And so very quickly here, brethren, just jumping back up here, verse 21 says, "The creation itself also shall be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God." Now look forward to that. This world is in bondage. And when people have the blessing of being freed from that, and how blessed are we? For we know that the whole creation groans and travails in pain together until now. The whole world has, brethren, through time. Man has, because man makes it harder. Man is inward, selfish by nature. You know, the world revolves around me. That's the way we think as human beings. You know, it's everywhere we are is life. No, it doesn't. It's about God and God's plan and purpose and what God is working out. "And not only the creation, but ourselves also, which have the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves grown within ourselves." So this is written back a long time ago here, 2,000 years ago nearly, and primarily focused upon the first fruits. But we're at a different transition right now. We're at the end of the first fruits. End of 6,000 years. And so God has blessed us to focus upon, yes, those who are still being prepared, those very few who are being prepared to be in that first resurrection, that great resurrection, and also to help others to realize there is a transition in time now. We're getting ready to focus now upon the millennium. We're almost through the 6,000 years and the purpose of what God has been doing for 6,000 years of that part of Pentecost, the first fruits, being prepared to govern and rule on this earth. We're getting ready now of those who are being called now to have opportunity to be the beginning of the foundation of a millennial period. And you can't even begin to comprehend what that means, those of you who have opportunity for that, to be the foundation of the Church of God. To have lived in this age and to begin the part of that, you're going to be known in history of those that began in the church in the beginning of that last 1,000-year period. You don't even begin to grasp and to know. You're going to be written down and remembered as those who were faithful, those who started out a new age. It's not just about the 144,000 there, it's about that which continues on in life, and that which is the foundation, the beginning of that, and the first part of that. Awesome, the opportunities that are before you. So it says, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, waiting for the redemption of our body, for we are saved by hope. You know, the confidence, what God has given us to live by, that's what this word is. But this kind of confidence, hope that is seen, is not real confidence. It's not living by faith. You know, that which we already have. So it says, for what a man sees, why does he yet, and this does mean hope, you know, what does he yet hope for, trust in, expect to have it? There are things we look for and expect to have. They're coming. We know that. We live by that. But if we hope for that which we see not, then we do with patience wait for it. Well, that's a part of the problem sometimes. We get a little impatient. And we must be patient and keep things in their proper perspective and a proper focus of what God is doing. Likewise, the Spirit also helps our infirmities, for we know not what we should pray for as we ought. There are times we just, you know, we don't even know what to say. But the Spirit itself makes intercession for us with the groanings which cannot be uttered, expressed. God knows, because that Spirit that dwells within us, He knows exactly what's going on in our heart and mind and being as we go through the struggle. And He that searches the heart knows what is the mind of the Spirit, because He makes intercession for the saints according to the will of God. So God's Spirit, it, you know, that power of God that works, that comes from God, that works with us, it works together, brethren, from the Father, as it shows verse 28. And we know that all things work together for good. Whatever you're experiencing in life, whatever you're going through, God is using your particular situation in your particular place, in your particular place of life, wherever you are. He doesn't take us out of those things and put us in something totally different as a whole, except for the church. You know, where we live, you know, we stay there as a whole until there's a necessary point of moving for whatever purpose, and He leads us to those things. But as a whole, even that stays oftentimes the same. And whatever comes our way, even by time and chance, God will use to mold and fashion things, specific things within us as to what we're being prepared for. And we know that all things, brother, this is, do we believe it? Then we live by faith according to it. We do, don't we? And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to His purpose. How blessed are we? Keep focused on that, brethren. And read the rest of this chapter here, this chapter 8, because it talks about those things. There's nothing that should separate us from God, from the love that God is pouring out upon us, especially now, brethren, at this part of the race. Consider it. And if you've been kind of like a person does in a race, sometimes you start letting down. You can really put out more, but the mind tends to want to let down, sometimes even to quit. Don't do it. Pick up the pace. Do the exact opposite of what your mind says and yield to God's mind, to God's Spirit, and run and put more into your running. Be convicted of that. Be convinced of that, and keeping focused on the goal, brethren, that's in front of us and where God is leading us. With that, brethren, we'll stop there for today. Sometimes they're just things we need at a particular phase of our life, and God is showing us that we need to have the patience to wait for what He is working out, because there's some specific things He's working out, and to continue to yield that process and just be determined to run, brethren, and keep focused on the goal that God has set before us.